Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otto. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is David Nath. David is a chartered accountant, statistician, analytics lead, board member, and a part-time model. David identifies as a first-generation immigrant, as someone who is queer, non-binary, and neurodiverse. They grew up in India, where, with their aptitude for science, they were expected to study engineering. However, they were convinced that statistics was going to be important in a world where data-related topics such as computer science were rapidly evolving. They did a BSc Statistics in Kolkata, followed by a Master's in Statistics at University College Dublin. David then went on to work at KPMG Ireland and since then has held several data and statistics leadership roles at companies in Berlin. David says one of the biggest challenges they face in their career is sometimes accepting to go into places where I may not be happy or where people might challenge me. They consider their biggest career success as the moment when they decided to go into a new workplace presenting as non-binary without asking what the HR policies were. They said they knew in that moment there was no way that they were going to ask other people how they should act. David Nath, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Thank you so much, Charlotte, for this wonderful opportunity. And I'm really, really grateful and happy to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. And David, we had such a great interview in Berlin last year for We Need New Leaders. So I knew I had to have you back on the podcast. So let's talk about that moment of deciding that you weren't going to ask other people how you should act. What did that mean for you?
Thank you so much for asking that. So I, for 25 years, let's say, I always struggled with my identity. I had a very difficult childhood with having different kind of abuses and also leading into the adult life, emotional, physical. And one day I was walking down the street, I think it was at the age of 20, 21, and literally this sort of enlightenment came to me that I have been always trying to make other people happy, always, my entire life. And the result was that I have failed to keep other people happy. And at the same time, I was also unhappy. So I had to take that control back towards me and told myself, well, the only person who knows me best is me. So I can be happy. Like, it's, for example, something like making a cup of coffee or making food for someone else, right? If you make food for someone else, somebody will say, okay, this is really great. Somebody will say, this is really spicy. But you can make the food exactly towards your spice palette, and you will always be happy with that. So after that, I told myself, I am always going to be true to myself, and I'm always going to do things that makes me happy. And it was a difficult conversation, and there are a lot of consequences. That means that I have to really keep my friends, parents, acquaintances, everyone, colleagues aside and put myself forward and first. And after that, it really became much easier for me because I have been happy ever since. Yes, there has been some challenges with people, because they always have their own comments. But at the end of the day, There's two things that I have in my head. So first of all, obviously I'm going to listen to my close people, my friends. And second of all, I always say, well, if you're not going to pay my bills, then I don't really need to listen to you.
It's such a powerful moment of choosing yourself. And I wonder how it felt that day as you walked into a brand new job presenting as non-binary. How did you experience that?
So for me, when I worked into the last company, so I presented myself as non-binary for the first time when I was still working in KPMG. And that was right after the COVID. In KPMG, I think I was really grateful to see that almost everyone accepted me as who I am. Of course, people were surprised and people had questions. However, really, I whenever people had questions with good intentions, I just answered them. And I told them that, well, you are working with me, my skills, my what I can provide to the company. You are not working with my clothes. And there's been a lot of research and statistics have shown that when people are themselves as fully, whatever that means with their neurodiversity, with their clothing, with their sexual orientation, they perform better. They really perform better, and you are contributing towards your employees' psychological safety. Yes. In the new workplace, I was ecstatic because the new workplace was really full of diverse and international people. So when I walked into the room, the office, I literally saw someone wearing shorts, and that really made me super happy. So there are people with different kind of clothing diversity. So in the new workplace, I have not had to face that issue at all. Yes, there's always people, there will always be people in this world who will be, let's say, confused. Why do I look like a man and I wear a woman's dress? However, everybody have certain questions. And if people are not used to seeing someone like me, then why not start this journey where people do see someone like me? And after some time, they won't ask these questions anymore. It will just be a normal thing.
You know, as you describe the fact that people who are free to show up as themselves in the workplace, whether it's with their neurodiversity, whether it's non-binary, in whatever way they want to show up, helps them perform better. It's literally the reason why I do what I do. It's the reason I wrote the book. It's the reason I'm doing this podcast, because what I see is people squashed into boxes, forced to behave and lead according to old archetypes. And I felt that way when I started out in corporate. And then when I became a leader myself, I felt I didn't have any examples of women in corporate leadership roles in my family. So I sort of looked to the men around me, and that wasn't a great decision. I mean, it was something I've had to reverse over time, and it's a sort of access to wisdom that I've grown in my later years. But it's completely the point of why I've written the book and why I'm doing this podcast. So thank you so much for expressing it that way. Let's talk about you as a leader. What is your leadership style?
I mean, of course, in this world, there has been a lot of books written on different kinds of leadership style. There's this traditional leadership styles, and there's this new kind of leadership style. I think a lot of us, especially the leaders who are higher on the emotional intelligence spectrum and quite aware of themselves, they follow a mix of different leadership styles, right? Sometimes you have to be situational. Sometimes you have to be democratic. Sometimes it is about empathy. Sometimes you have to really take very hard decisions. So, but over and over again, if I see myself and if I see what other people have also expressed their opinion about me, considering also my LinkedIn recommendations, you will generally see that I have been considered as someone quite empathetic. Like I put the people forward first. I listen to the employees and the people who I'm working with, who are part of my group. And I take into consideration everybody's challenges. And only then I take a decision. Of course, sometimes you have to take certain hard decisions, but I think I'm quite emotionally intelligent and empathetic to be aware of my own challenges, my own biases, and everybody else's biases. And I always have an open mind to listening other people's experiences as well. So for the main thing for me is to that I express how I see a situation. I tell the people how I feel about it, and then let them also explain their own situation and their own feelings so that we come to an understanding. Collaboration is very important for me. Professionalism and in professional environment is not about competitiveness. I think where competitiveness exists, unless it's a sports competition or something, it hinders growth, personal and more both professional.
Yeah, that's a great insight because I think people often think they're in the workplace to compete with each other. Probably part of the old archetype. And the new way of leadership that we're moving towards is much more collaborative. One of the things you said to me during our interview in Berlin last year was that as a leader, you're extremely sensitive to the use of language and you're very thoughtful about how you use words. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yes, so language has always been very important for me. Mainly because of the fact that I struggled with languages when I was a child. It took me quite some years to learn English properly, and currently I'm also learning German. And since I'm a queer non-binary person, so whatever language I use towards other people and whatever language other people uses towards me as a non-binary person has an impact on my mental health. And when I am talking with people, I really try to express my opinions and my feelings in as much neutral manner as possible, so that I take into consideration what I'm trying to say, so my points and my meanings are come across with the right intention, and the people on the other side are also receiving this with the right intention and the right meaning. Sometimes it's very difficult, and that's mainly because, and I boil this down to just one point. It's not about the language per se, it's about your own triggers. Because if I am saying something, so let's say if I am saying, okay, this was not done properly in this manner, and let me give you some feedback. This could have been done in this way. Then the other person can, if there is a trigger, let's say, then the other person can either read it as, okay, I have done this in this manner, and okay, I have to improve in this point. Or the other person can think of it as a completely forget what I have said and think, oh, I'm not good at my job. I'm simply not good at my job. But this really boils down to your own triggers. When somebody gives feedback to me, and language-wise, one needs to also understand the cultural differences. Some people coming from different communities and different cultures, from what I have noticed, use language in very different manner. So somebody coming from a certain culture where the languages are very direct, they will say very directly in English. And you need to be able to catch that. You need to be able to understand that, and with also the right intention, and then give your feedback. And I think one of the other things that helped me a lot is coming across different international cultures and people. Because when you work in a very diverse cultures, you really understand this.
Yeah, it makes me think you talked about situational leadership,
Yes.
and it makes me think that all communication at work is also situational. So it's not just one person talking to another person receiving that message. It's one person in the fullness of their humanity talking to another person in the fullness of humanity. One or other may be further ahead in their own self-awareness journey, but the triggering can happen subconsciously and automatically. And so, as a leader, do you think that leaders have a responsibility to explain themselves more or better so that their team members understand more subtly what they're saying?
Yes, and I do think that it works both the ways, because I guess I might zoom out a little bit and think about as well leaders who are not in leadership positions, but who are in the team, like maybe in the lower or the junior level, but they according to me can also be perceived as leaders in different manner, right? So I think it works both ways. What the leads, whoever is in the lead position, and someone who is in the opposite side of the leadership or the lead, need to understand each other. And one important thing they need to really think about is the intention. I always keep on using the word the intention. The trigger is something that you have for yourself. So somebody is saying something to you and you get triggered. But the intention is how you perceive the other person. So both this together goes very well. Sometimes I have gotten questions or responses which sound triggering to me. But then when I really zoom out and look at the person's intention, then I see it's right. And I always take these two things together. It's kind of similar to gender identity and gender expression. One is how you perceive yourself. One is how others perceive you. So intention is about how you perceive others, and then trigger is about what is happening within yourself.
I love that. Always think about the intention, because I think that can also help you people process in the moment. So, David, we're seeing a lot of companies pull back, renege on their diversity and inclusion and equity programs at the moment, starting to happen in Germany even, which is kind of shocking to me. What does diversity mean to you, both as an individual and as a leader?
So that is very interesting question, and also very broad as well, but I will try to be as short as possible. So for me, diversity is it's simply having different kind of people from different background, identities, perspectives, experiences. And what advantages does this bring? The advantages is, as I mentioned, that when you work with different people, your mind gets opened to different experiences, to different perspectives, and then you start understanding everybody else's intention, and you start understanding everybody else's and yours triggers, which really helps, because it helps you being a better person. It helps your own personal development. So there are a couple of perspectives about diversity which are very important for me in a professional environment. One is representation. As we all know, representation is very important, because as you said, like, you only saw men in leadership positions, and you inculcated certain behavior patterns from them, and then you had to unlearn them. But had you had more representation of female in leadership, then things would have been quite different, you know. So that is one aspect. Then the second aspect is opportunity and access. So this is very important, because not everybody from different perspective has different access. And when you are working with different diverse people, your own mental frequency increases, because you started experiencing other people's challenges, and you have to find solutions to give access and opportunity towards other people. You start thinking like them. So it's not about the fact that when you see, let's say, a blind person or a person in wheelchair coming to the workplace, you would start thinking, okay, had I been in this situation, what are the different kind of access that this person or somebody needs? And then the third and one of the most important thing is that the impact on the organizational culture, it's huge, because leaders, they set the tone always. If you see a leader on the top who is good, then you will see like everybody from the top level is good. And if you see the other way, then you will also see the whole characteristic and perspective being leached down into the bottom. It signals that the difference is valued but not tokenized. Now, I know that for a for a very long time. This is an argument that during the Pride month or during different times, or organizations have tokenized inclusion and diversity. And you can even see that right now, because now that the world is being going on the opposite direction, so the organizations have kind of shifted and let's say chameleoned themselves into also thinking that. My perspective on that is that I'm probably going to say something which might surprise a lot of people. And the thing is that it is okay, because if I'm being in an environment or going into a country where there might be harm to my physical self, there's only two options that I can take. Either I do not go into that country, but if I really do want to go into that country, I have to hide a little bit of myself. So I think it's, if the organizations want, and I know there are certain organizations who also does that, who do hire people from diverse background, it's not that they are stopping to hire people. And we can look into this as well. We don't always have to focus on the fact that the organizations have started renegating on their diverse policies and whatever they are showing in terms of diverse activities. But you also need to think about the fact that this is the current climate. One needs to somehow really chameleon themselves with this climate, and at the same time, take like hidden activities that support diversities. And that is what it is all about. It's not about showing big things. Yes, showing big things is important, but it's also about how people help each other in a hidden manner. If that answers your question, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds to me like what you're describing is that if for a company where diversity, inclusion, and equity is strongly part of their values,
mm-hmm.
as long as they continue to live those values,
yes,
then they are future-proofing themselves,
exactly.
and preparing for the change that's coming further down the road, which my belief is much more diversity and much more inclusion is coming. And the companies that are able to just switch off their DEI programs
mm-hmm.
was probably only performative anyway.
Exactly.
And that was tokenism.
Yes, absolutely. And this also comes across with people as well. I know there are different kinds of diversity DEI tactics. So I generally divide it into like active DEI tactics and then passive DEI tactics. Over time, I have heard a lot of arguments towards active DEI tactics and not passive DEI tactics, which for me is quite sad, because I have a lot of friends and I have been across a lot of people who are passively helping people like me. They are not going into pride parades, or they are not shouting, okay, DEI is important for me. But being around me, for me, is that enough, and helping me with my own challenges is enough that they are doing this silent or hidden or passive DEI activism.
That's such an interesting perspective. I really like that. Thank you. So, David, in our interview for We Need New Leaders, I asked how your identity intersects with your leadership. And you said the more intersectional you are and the fewer privileges you have, the more resilience and empathy you have. Could you talk about that?
Yes. So this brings me back to so many different kinds of memory in myself. Of course, there are different books and statistics that have been written towards this. And the reason I'm saying this is because the more diverse and the more intersectional you are, that means you are becoming more and more of a minority into this majority world. And that means that in this world, there are a lot of activities that are geared towards majority. So, for example, if you try to find apartment in Berlin, yeah. So, if you are a wheelchair person, how many apartments that are there, or how many spaces that are there that are wheelchair friendly? And the more challenges you face throughout your childhood and throughout your adulthood, you find out solutions. So your mind becomes more solution oriented. And you are more, you are better in finding different other methods or different other solutions to fulfill your needs. And that means that the more solutions you find to fulfill your needs, the more resilient you become, because you understand that this is the way the world works. And I need to be able to be resilient to not be upset at every single moment, you know. So talking about myself, I have been to therapy for like the last 5-6 years, and I have worked a lot on myself. And sometimes my friends come or people come and ask me, how do you feel when you walk outside in women's clothes and other people are staring at you? Like, I would not be able to do that. And so you need your brain focuses on the positive aspects. Your brain focuses on finding resilience. And one day you just realize, oh, I have gone on the other direction. I've gone towards the other side. So for me, intersectionality is very important. That does not mean, I just also want to point out, that does not mean that people who are not intersectional are not resilient at all. Resilience can happen on different levels based on your challenges. But generally, I have noticed the more challenges you face, the more resilience you become. It's like creating, well, I'm Indian, so I would say creating a curry. The more you let the sauce simmer, the more flavor it produces.
Oh, that's a beautiful metaphor we can take for intersectionality and resilience. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, David, along with being a chartered accountant and a data analytics lead, you're also a part-time model. Would you like to tell us about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is very interesting for me because throughout my entire life, I've never considered myself as somebody who can model, because mainly because I have a lot of insecurities, or had, let's say, a lot of insecurities about my face, about my body, about my whole physical appearance. However, since the last few years, I found my own style. And when I walked into different spaces and people started telling me, oh, you have such a nice style, you have such a unique style, or you really are like such a colorful person. And I started seeing myself like that. Sometimes you require other people to tell you good things to be able to see good things within yourself. And this is obviously a part of my identity. One time I had a chat with my with one of my friends where we really dissected like my expression, my gender expression. And then I realized it's not so much about my gender expression. I believe that had I been not a queer person, or not somebody who identifies as homosexual, I would still probably wear women's dresses. I would still probably be showing who I am, because this is a part of my identity. Now, since the last 2 years, I've been toying with the fact, oh, maybe I should start applying for some modeling agencies. I did. So last year I did apply for some, and I didn't hear any responses back. I was not having too much of an expectations. It was just a fun thing for me to do. And then I came across this company called Diversity Models. It was new. I think it was founded last year in April. I talked with Lenny Louise, who was the founder of the Diversity Models, on LinkedIn. I sent them a message, and then she responded back. And I was really happy to see that. I was their first model. And 20 of us had our first modeling gig for our portfolio last year in November. And it was so much fun. And I really believe in this organization and what they are doing, what they're standing for, because I have never seen a modeling organization that caters for diversity in such a big volume and spectrum. Like, it feels like they are the definition of diversity. They are showcasing people with who are neurodivergent. They are showcasing people who have different body images. They are showcasing people with different physical abilities. They are showcasing people with different gender identities, sexual orientation, or intersectionality of all of this. And they are really taking people, like most of the models, have never considered modeling opportunities and careers, and never have been in front of a camera. And for me, it's amazing. And then in December, I reached out to them as well. They were setting up their diversity board, and I told myself, well, you know, I have experience in DEI, I have experience in leading businesses. So why not become part of the board as well? So I'm also part of their board and recently became their social and marketing media campaign manager as well to further their interests and to also have some experience myself.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Are they based in Berlin?
They are based in Berlin, but they do take models from other parts of Europe. Like I know there are some models who are in Amsterdam or who are in Spain.
Yes, and I should say the title of the business, although it sounds like diversity to the ear, is actually written Diverse City.
Yes, yeah.
which I love as well. It's a play on words.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and because Berlin is such a diversity, right? Like they're based in Berlin, so yeah.
David, how do you think about your reputation, and what elements of your reputation matter to you?
So reputation. So for me, I think that if I think about reputation in its broader context or in a professional environment, there are obviously the traditional definitions of reputation. For me, it boils down to values. So there are four strong values that I have within myself. One is being open, open-mindedness, having an open ear towards different kind of experiences and different kind of opinions. Second would be honesty and kindness. I'm a very honest and kind person, and I value that within other people. Third is personal development. So one needs to be open towards developing themselves and not being close to different different types of personal developments, be it physical skills, emotional, spiritual, psychological. And then last but not the least, commitment. So I always believe that whatever you are doing in life, you need to give like 100% into this. You need to be fully committed towards that, be it, you know, working out in the gym or reading a book or starting your own business. Nothing in this world can happen, or nothing good in this world happens without commitment, you know, if you are not fully committed. So based on that, I think I would say I have a pretty good reputation as people perceive me, as I perceive myself, very strong in this. One very interesting thing that somebody told me, actually there are some colleagues in the current workplace who told me that they have a huge respect towards me, and that is because of the fact that I'm very true to my words. Like I am very true to my words, and I know which battles to pick, which I really didn't realize before that I do that. But they gave me certain examples, and I realized, yes, actually that is that I can also take that as part of my values, because in this world, you have a limited amount of energy. You have a limited amount of emotional, spiritual, psychological energy, and you need to be able to invest this in the right moments, the right opportunities, the right people, and the right negative experiences. You cannot fight every single negative experiences. As I mentioned before, I cannot be sad or depressed 365 days, right? So, so that's one of the things that I would like to say. Yeah.
I love that you mentioned values in terms of reputation, because in my work with my clients, you know, I do a reputation 360, so I interview other people about my client. And what the most important question for me is about value. So I ask the individual what their values are, and then I ask the people around them what their values are, what that person's values are. And if they don't match, I mean, people can use different language. They can say integrity but maybe they mean honesty. I mean, that is just a sort of a vocabulary issue. But if the values don't match, then I always think, well, this is a bit of a reputation gap, and this is something that we need to work on. So I love that you bring up values. So we talked a bit about old leadership archetypes. We're in, I think, in a big change moment where there's been the pushback, but diverse bodies, diverse people aren't going anywhere. So what can we do collectively and individually to change that old leadership archetype that at the moment is holding us back a little bit?
Two things I would like to say, because there are so many things really you can do. One thing about, so if I'm considering from a perspective of other people, so you towards other people, have an open mind, listen to their experiences. If you feel triggered by that, take a moment and try to talk out your triggers, talk out your feelings, and also explain to yourself that how would you or what would you do if you were in this person's shoes. Try to understand. And then the second point is towards you to you, which is understand, focus on learning your own triggers and work on them. Because if you do not work on these, then you will not personally develop. You will not personally grow. You will be stuck in your own biases, in your own leadership, in your own traditional leadership style. And other people will perceive it. Other people will understand this. And you will not get the opportunity for yourself, and other people will not give the opportunity for you as well. So those are the two things.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that always strikes me when we talk, David, is you have such beautiful self-awareness. And I know that's come through hard work. You've spent a lot of time in therapy and you've worked very hard on yourself. But I think it's such a great point that self-understanding and trying to understand others is really the key to unlocking not just empathy, but actual change.
Yes,
in the workplace.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. And, you know, nobody is perfect. I'm also not perfect. And the other day I got, you know, there was a moment somebody said something and I got severely triggered. And I realized that within myself that, yes, I got triggered. I think I got triggered because of the fact that I had so many changes, other things in life. Sometimes you also have different situations. And when you have other negative experiences in life, your body frequency lowers. And when your body frequency lowers, you have less patience, you have less chance to basically heal yourself, right? And then one of the things that really helps me is that I just sit down, I go back into my own space, my own cave. I sit down, I talk it out within my head. Is that okay, this has happened. That is where I am feeling restless. So in my body, in my chest or in my shoulders. And then I say out those emotion loud. Okay, I'm feeling really, really angry. And then I take a deep breath. And after that, it really helps. Because I think there was a book written by someone very famous. I forgot about it right now, but I think it was like a 5 second or a 10 second rule where you really just talk all of this out. And when you are taking a moment to talk all of this out, your reaction or response time increases, right? And the whole point is to increase the reaction or response time so that you don't act out in a rush manner.
Yeah, and that's coming up a lot in some of my other interviews with other leaders, which is this idea of the power of the pause,
yes,
the power of taking a breath, not rushing, because then you act from a place of wisdom if you don't rush into something.
Yes.
Thank you so much for that insight. David, now onto the questions I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
Ah, yes. So it's a book which is called A Complex PTSD, written by Pete Walker, who is a psychotherapist who specializes in trauma recovery, but specifically childhood trauma recovery. So this, I recommend this book to everyone, even somebody who has never been to therapist, and especially who have got childhood trauma or who thinks that they have a certain sort of childhood trauma, especially from parents and or from different kind of resources and environments. And this is one book that changed my life. And I really realized that how to basically work through my triggers and pause. So this is a book that I really, really recommend a lot. So a couple of things that the book, like let's say, talks about is emotional flashbacks. So This happened to me a lot. So obviously some sort of trigger that when I was with my exes or when I was with my friends, and there are certain things that happen. So be it like I was talking and somebody interrupted me, right? And then I would really get triggered. But then I realized, oh, it was because of the fact that this, for a long time in my childhood, this person always used to interrupt me and my feelings wouldn't come out. So it would be cut off, right? And if it would be cut off, then you have this wave of emotions bubbling inside you. Or this book also talk about harsh inner critics, toxic shame, people pleasing that I have done over a long, 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 long time, and also difficulty in setting boundaries. So after reading this book, I think it helped me a lot. So I recommend this book to everyone.
Lovely. Thank you so much. And as you know, my passion is, how do we help our emerging leaders who are coming through, who are looking for great role models, who want to land their dream leadership role, keep their dream leadership role, or even create it?
Mm-hmm.
What three tips do you have for leaders from diverse backgrounds or of diverse identities?
Okay, so first of all, I want to thank specifically to my first manager. I had a lot of really great managers in my life, thankfully. One of my first seniors and managers who became my manager in KPMG, I think I learned a lot of my leadership style and a lot of my leadership experience from them. And of course, I have my own unique style as well, but I learned a lot of behavior patterns from him. And I do want to take a moment to thank him. I also mentioned this to him. And there's three advices that I would like to give. The first two I've already said. One is like having an open mind towards other people's experiences and really be open to listening to their own opinions, even if it's something that goes against your values or even if it is something that you don't agree with. The second thing is you to you, which is that you need to be able to learn, understand, and work through your own triggers. And thirdly, I would like to say that have fun and have a sense of humor. Don't be serious.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah. Yes, it's really important because I have noticed from my own self, when you have fun and when you don't take everything seriously, because you have you listen to other people's experience and you work through your triggers, it really develops your own sense of identity and increases in your frequency in such a wonderful and beautiful manner that you welcome other people to bring you all these experiences and to be able to trigger you positively so that you work through them, you know, because you are welcoming other people to your own spaces. You are not shutting other people out.
Well, that leads me very beautifully to my last question, which is, David Nath, what brings you joy?
Dancing. Dancing. I really love dancing. I like music in general. Since the last 7-8 months, I have been more towards techno music. I've generally been also into classical music and pop music and jazz music and different kinds of other music as well. But recently I've been into techno music, different kinds of genres. And I go into different events, techno events, and I dance myself. It's a way for me of expression. And when you dance, it's not about the dance itself, the physical activity. It's about how free you can be within yourself that you don't care how the other people perceive you, positively or negatively. So dancing really brings me a lot of joy. You can obviously find your own way to figure out what brings you joy. So it can be going for a nature walk or sewing or reading or playing video games. But I do want to take a moment and just ask someone to take a minute, listen to a music that you really like, and just move your body. Let the music and your body and your mind be one. And you will see that it will bring you wonders. It will increase your body frequency.
What a lovely answer. David Nath, thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.